Good morning, everyone. My name's Greg. If you're new around here, one of the pastors on staff here, and we're super glad that you're here this morning. If this is your first time here, just a little bit about us. We are a multi-site church. We have multiple locations throughout the Grand Rapids area. We're here in the Hudsonville location. We have one in Granville, over in Walker, in Wyoming. We have one in Byron Center, another one, a Harbor Church. We're all called Harbor Churches over in Jamestown. And we have one mission together, and that mission, it's really all about God and it's all about people. And I think those are two pretty amazing things to center your mission around. Actually, that's what Jesus came to do, is to be God in person among us. And then he came for the sake of us, for us people. And so we give ourselves to the very same mission that Jesus gave himself to. And that mission, we call it helping people find their way back to God. That's how we say it here. Jesus came to seek and save that which was lost. He came that people might come into relationship with God, and us too. Because there was a moment in our lives where we met up with Jesus and our lives were changed. We were transformed by his incredible love, and we long for that for people. And so we come alongside of anybody with any story at any place. And we have a saying around here, and maybe this is you, that you're not quite sure yet what you believe. And we say this, that you can belong here before you believe. This is a place where you can fit in and ask questions and explore the things of Jesus in a place where you're going to be loved and encouraged as you do that. And so today I just want to say welcome to any of you that are here for the first time or that are newer to Fairhaven. And we've been in a series. This morning we're going to pick that series up. We've been in the book of Genesis since the beginning of the year, and we are in chapter 21 today, beginning at verse 1. We're going to go through verse 7, just a few verses this morning. But as you're turning there, I want to say something about the stories of the Bible. And one of the reasons I really love the Bible and what we've been finding since the beginning of this journey in Genesis is that the Bible is real. And the Bible is raw, and it doesn't pull punches, it doesn't hide stories, it doesn't Photoshop, it doesn't create these highlight reels without also showing you all the errors that happen behind the scenes. It just says it like it is, and it puts the whole story out there, and I love it because when the story's fully told, we can tap into our own story. When we read stories of families that didn't have it all right, or families that didn't get it all right, or people that got it right in some places and really got it wrong in others, we can go, yeah, me too. That's my story. That's my family. And then we can find that this ancient book is really old. This ancient book has a relevancy for us here and now, because people are people throughout the generations, and families are families throughout the generations. And today, we're going to jump into the story and pick up on a person named Isaac. Maybe you've heard the name before, maybe you haven't, but we've ended our segment on Abraham, though Abraham's story continues here, and we're jumping into his son's story named Isaac. And the Jewish people, the Christian people for generations, we have referred to our God as the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. It's that Isaac that we're going to be talking about today and next week and the next week and for the next several weeks, chasing the story of Isaac. And it is a story that is beautiful and incredible. It is a story that has, like, I would even call a miracle in the midst of this story. And it's a story that is ugly and painful, and there's these amazing things that happen and these things that make us shake our heads that happen, kind of like our stories. And so let's read the story here this morning, chapter 21, verses 1 through 7. Now the Lord was gracious to Sarah. Sarah was Abraham's wife. Sarah and Abraham had been promised by God that they would have children together. Now the Lord was gracious to Sarah, as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah what he had promised. Sarah became pregnant and bore a son to Abraham in his old age at the very time God had promised him. Abraham gave the name Isaac to the son Sarah bore him. When his son Isaac was 8 days old, Abraham circumcised him as God commanded him. Abraham was 100 years old. Wow. 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. And Sarah said, God has brought me laughter, and everyone hears about this will laugh with me. And she added, who would have said to Abraham and that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. And I'm like, yeah, old, right? And some of us around here, we have heard the story before. We know the story. We know how old Abraham was when he had Isaac. And yet, honestly, just sit with that for a second. He's 100 years old. And I don't know anymore, because in our culture, it feels like old is kind of pushing its way up. And like, I kind of like that, because as I'm closing in on 60, 60 is still pretty young. I'm like, that's good news for me. But like, I don't know. Like, when can you say that somebody's old? I think 100 fits, doesn't it? Like, we can finally say that's old. 100 is old. And when we start talking about childbearing, 100 is ancient, just ancient. And then you've got Sarah. Sarah is actually 90 years old. And we would say that though there are people that have children into their 40s, that's old for childbearing. Not necessarily old, but old for childbearing. And at 40 to have a child, now Sarah's double 40, that's 80, add a decade. She's having a child. And 90 years old, that's ridiculous. It's like, really, honestly, it's ridiculous. He's 100, she's 90, you're going to have a kid together, whatever. And she actually laughed when God told her she would have a child that would be hers when she was this old. Like, yeah, no way, not going to happen. I don't know that I can actually, I want to believe it, but I just have a hard time believing it. And then it happened. She actually had a child, 100 years old and 90 years old. And I get asked questions periodically from people like, do you believe these stories really? Like, come on, man. These stories in the Bible, there are some crazy, far out there stories. Do you actually believe these stories? A guy 100 years old, a woman, 90 years old, actually had a child. Do you believe that story? And I'm going to give you the quick answer on it is yes, I actually believe it. And the reason I believe it, and maybe you're in that place that you're exploring, even as I said earlier, that maybe you're trying to figure this out and you're trying to explore. I'm going to tell you how I came to the place where I actually believe that story and so many others from the Bible. The reason I believe it is because I settled a long time ago the greater miracle. And once you settle the greater miracle, these lesser miracles are quite easy to actually believe. The greater miracle for me is this. You're here, and I'm here, you're breathing, and I'm breathing, and we're alive on this planet. We have this capacity to communicate with one another, and we see generations after generations that continue on this planet. And that's the greater miracle, that God actually spoke out of nothing. Once you settle the idea that there's a creator that created this intelligent design that is us and that is the universe, these lesser ones are far easier to hold on to. When you think about the earth itself and this greater thing called the universe and the earth sitting on an axis of 23.5 degrees, and if it's off just by a degree and a half, 2 degrees off, one way or the other way, it hurls into space itself. It's not here. The earth doesn't exist as we know it. Just a degree or two off, and yet God sets it at 23.5 degrees. Stay right there. The sun, move the sun a little bit farther away, and the earth is a block of ice. Move it a little bit closer, and it is on fire, inhabitable.
And yet God told that star, you sit here and you burn at this temperature that far from the earth, and it is allowing life on earth. Take Jupiter, for example, and put Jupiter into our solar system, this thing called the Milky Way. And Jupiter has this mass to it. I mean, it is like, I would be like, it's like the weightlifter of the planets in our system. It is just thick. It's massive. And its gravitational pull is such that it becomes a meteor magnet for the Milky Way solar system. In other words, everything that flies into our system, meteors that are ripping through our solar system, they get dragged over to Jupiter, and Jupiter just takes it. Where the Earth wouldn't. We would have been pummeled. The earth would have had catastrophe. After catastrophe, no life would have been here. It's like when we were kids. We used to say, I don't know why, but if you're from Jupiter, you're stupider. Like, I don't even know what that means. And like, how stupid that is. And it's got nothing to do with the sermon, but I just thought I'd throw it out there. So, but here's Jupiter, right? Jupiter's in our solar system. Jupiter, and I go, who designed this? And this is just one solar system. These are just a couple. You start exploring. How probable is it that there is actually you and me on this planet? That is the biggest miracle of all. And then throw into this that Jesus, God, stepped into the earth, went into the tomb, came out of that tomb, and defeated death itself. You take those two, just those two, and start talking about Jesus walked on water. Child's play. He made the water out of nothing. Spoke it into existence. The fact that it's even here in the first place is the bigger miracle. Him walking on it, just a little piece of it. He took water. Yeah, he made it. And he turned it into another liquid. Wine. That's a lesser miracle within the greater, the one who created liquid itself. And then you think about a man and a woman having children. Of course, it's what men and women do. They have children when they are married. And then you go, well, Abraham's 100 and Sarah's 90. I'm just telling you, for me personally, that is the lesser, easier, way easier thing to believe. Once you settle the idea, this is the creator of everything that is and spoke it into existence. His world gets shaped by his words. And this one rose victorious over the grave. And this one, it's amazing. But this little speck of dust, within the greater universe that continues to expand and he continues to create, because that's who he is. He knows every single hair on your head. Every one of them. He's got every one of them counted. Amazing. Yeah, I believe. I believe that this took place. I believe that a 100-year-old man and a 90-year-old woman who had been promised by God that they would have a child had a child, and they named him Isaac. So this story, 7 verses long. They had a baby. And for all the build-up on this thing, honestly, when you think about, we've been talking about this. If you've been with us in this journey, we have been talking through the story of Abraham. God's promised you, Abraham, you're going to have as many. How many times have you heard me say it? Lori just said it last week. Jeremy said it from the pulpit. You're going to have as many children as the stars in the sky or the sands on the sea. You will not be able to count them. And the build-up on the story, it's, he's told and he's told and he's told. And then we've got chapter after chapter after chapter. And we've been in here week after week after week saying it's coming. It's coming. He's going to have a child with Sarah. And then it comes. The story happens. And we get 7 verses with like almost no fanfare. It's kind of like, okay, they had a child. His name's Isaac. And then the story moves on. Like, that's it. All of this build up. And that's the climax to this story. Like all of this hype that's coming, it's coming, it's coming. And 25 years actually in the waiting is what we're talking about for Abraham and Sarah. 25 years from the announcement, trying to have a child until they finally do. And we get 7 verses, ho-hum, sort of mundane, reminds me a lot of every single fall when Pastor Jeremy gets up here and he starts talking about the lions and they're going to be amazing, right? And when he comes back from Israel, you can tell him I made fun of him. That's all right. I don't care. And we make fun of each other and have fun. But he's like, they're going to be amazing Super Bowl. Then what happens? We get 3 games into the season. Jeremy goes dead silent. Doesn't talk about him hardly at all. Starts talking about the next year again, right? So here we are. We got this 25-year buildup. We have chapters. We have decades in the making. And we go, bad Isaac. And what? And the Bible's real. The Bible doesn't Photoshop. The Bible, when you read the stories, doesn't just hit the highlight reel. It doesn't just gloss over stuff. It just says, we're gonna keep it real with you and tell you what happened, because we have 7 verses, minor celebration. And maybe some of us feel that sometimes too, right? When we show up and it's time to celebrate with the family, we show up to Christmas and we're going, hey, this is going to be a good time with a greater family, and somebody brings it up and you go, shh, celebration's ruined. That was short-lived. Or it's Easter time, we're all going to gather around the table and we're going to have ham and cheesy potatoes here and we're going to hang out with one another, and somebody begins to talk about that one thing that nobody wants to talk about. Or you think maybe dad can keep it buttoned up this time. He pushes the buttons and starts pushing them. You go, really? So short-lived, this celebration lasted about 7 verses. Just went that short, and that is the story here. The celebration is short because of the junk that's about to follow, and we get a clue from what Sarah actually said in these 7 verses. Here's what she said. God has brought me laughter, and everyone who hears about this will laugh with me. Actually, what she was saying is, God has brought me Isaac. And everyone who hears about this will Isaac with me. And I know that sounds weird, but the name Isaac actually means he who laughs. The name Isaac actually means laughter. God has given me laughter, like 25 years in the waiting, and he has given me joy. And everyone who hears of this will feel the joy with me. Everyone who experiences this with me, well, Isaac with me has given me Isaac. And everyone who is with me in this will Isaac with me. But not everyone. Not everyone. Because there's another part of the story. And the celebration only goes 7 verses. It only goes for a hot second around the dinner table before the wrong button gets pushed, the wrong thing gets said. And then suddenly things are going south really quickly. And the divide that begins to happen in this family, we see it here. It actually opens up to a great chasm that we're going to see over the next weeks together as we enter into this story. That is a story of trauma and pain and hurt that is inside of the family system. Because Abraham had another son by another woman. And this woman happened to have been the maidservant. We spoke about this several weeks ago of Sarah. And Sarah said, after 10 years of trying to have a baby with Abraham, take Hagar. Clearly, we're not having children with one another. So take Hagar and have a child with my maidservant. And Abraham did. And the child that was born, his name was Ishmael. So we have Abraham and Sarah, and we have Abraham and Hagar, and we have Ishmael that was born, roughly 13 years old, and we have over here Isaac that's now born. We have a formula for a rift that could happen within this family, and that is exactly what happened. Here's the verses that follow the seven that show us that we begin to have some divides. Isaac grew and was weaned, just a young boy. And on the day Isaac was weaned, Abraham held a great feast. But Sarah saw that the son, Ishmael, whom Hagar the Egyptian had born to Abraham, was mocking. That feels like a weird sentence, doesn't it? I mean, I don't write that way. Maybe you write that way, and grammatically it may be correct, but it feels a little weird. But Sarah saw that Ishmael, whom Hagar the Egyptian had born to Abraham, was mocking. I mean, if we saw the word like he was running, or he was laughing, that he was laughing. I get a picture, but he was mocking. Feels like you ought to have some kind of object to that, but regardless, that Abraham, his son Ishmael was mocking, and she said to Abraham, "Get rid of that slave woman and her son, for that woman's son will never share in the inheritance with my son Isaac." Boom. The gauntlet is laid down. The divide is happening. And the author of this story masterfully is painting a tension that becomes so thick you can feel it. And you can definitely read it, and you can picture it in your own mind. And here's what's amazing. That word laughter, maybe that why it looks so weird there. That Ishmael was mocking. That word laughter is actually from the same word that word mocking comes from. They derive from the same words. They're derivatives of one another. The word kal is the word for laughter. He who laughs, his name is Isaac. He will bring laughter to all. They will laugh with me. The joy will be felt by all. The word pe'el, coming from the same root word, is the word mocking. They will laugh at me. They will make fun of me. They will look down on him and look down on me. Same words. This author is playing something and building the tension there, that there is a joining in and with and mocking and making fun of Sarah and Abraham and Isaac and Abraham and Ishmael. And we have a mess. Seven verses in, the celebration lasts a hot second, and then we have an explosion that's happening in the family, and the family celebration is going to move from bad to worse. To worse yet, the crack that's opening up is a divide that I think on some level probably every family feels somewhere, big or small, massive and painful and almost insurmountable for some, and not insurmountable but there for others. Whether it's your immediate family, extended family, or you just feel it sort of in yourself, because here's the reality too. This stuff never happens in family only, because family is made up with people. And so it's in the family, but if it's in the family, then somehow it finds its way in me too. And we feel the sting of it. We feel the pain of it. We feel the brokenness of it. And that's this story that we're diving into. It's a story of beauty and amazing grace and love. And it's a story of pain and suffering and brokenness and bitterness. It's every place that we bang into actually in this thing called life here, because it's in the place of employments that we're at. You can feel it. It's between people, because people are there. And it's it's in our homes, and we can feel it because the home is filled with people. And it's in the church too. And as much as we wouldn't want it to be in the church, it's in the church. It's probably why Billy Graham at one point actually said, if you're looking for the perfect church where none of that stuff exists, then just brace yourself, because you'll never find it. There is no such thing as a perfect church. But if you do find it, do that church a favor and don't join it, because you'll be the one that wrecks it, right? There is no such thing as perfect family systems, regardless of what system you're in. Every system has its stuff. And here's what we know. We know there are two universal human emotions that every single one of us feel. every single one of us have experienced at some point in life, if you live long enough, and you don't have to live long, not very long at all, and you will experience this. And every one of us has felt this, with the exception of Jesus. And he felt one of these. And it's called shame and loss. He experienced loss as he stood at the tomb of Lazarus. He experienced loss as he thought about the brokenness between relationships that he was trying to mend. In fact, that's why he came from heaven to earth, to mend that with us. But the shame that we begin to think, this is who I am. We've heard it long enough, or we've been mistreated long enough, or we've been abused long enough, or we've been the brunt of joking long enough, or we haven't had the right kind of laughter come our way long enough. And it's been mocking that's come our way long enough. And before long, we actually begin to believe the lie. I'm not who God says I am. I'm not loved and worthy of love. I'm not forgiven and a person that is designed for making a massive difference in this world. I'm not okay over here. I'm just not. We begin to believe that lie. Maybe this story, 7 moments into celebration, 7 things that get us rolling, 7 sentences that tell us this is the amazing gift of God. Maybe for some of us today, that 7 stuff just gets stomped out quickly by the enormity of the other stuff that we've experienced in our lives. If you're here today and you're that person and you're struggling maybe with stuff that's going on in your home or stuff that's going on in your marriage or stuff that's going on the inside of you, if you're in that place where you're experiencing loss at a deep level or you're experiencing shame that's almost overwhelming for you, if you've experienced what Jesus said only in a high, high magnitude, in this world you're going to have trouble. And you went, I never knew, man. Like, I'm starting to feel like back problems from shouldering all this stuff. It's just so heavy and the weight is so enormous. I want to say something to you this morning. I want to speak specifically to you. And I also want to just acknowledge this. I was thinking about this just this morning. That this is not the best way to get at what I'm talking about here, because we're at a disadvantage and I know it. And I'm just going to acknowledge it because I'm doing all the talking here. And you're listening. And how much better if we could just turn that around. And I was actually just listening to your story, because you're the master of your story. You know your story. You know your pain. You know what you've been through. You know your experience. And you know what you're feeling when it comes to loss or shame or guilt or burdens that you're carrying. You know those. And how much better if I was in that place that I was listening and not just speaking up here. So I know the limitations of what we're doing, but I do want to say this. We want to be that church. And when I say that, that's a charge to every single one of us that's in this room this morning. Because the church isn't the building. We know this here. We say it enough. The church is you. You're the church. You're it. We want to be these people, which means I want to become more and more this person. And I'm inviting you in, please. Let us become more and more the sort of people so that you, who are feeling the stuff that I've been talking about, you would know you're in a safe place. And it's okay that your celebration only has 7 sentences in it. And it's all right. I mean, it's part of the story, and we wish it wasn't so. And we say often around here that we all have the same story. I know this is true. Yeah, we do. And I also know this is true as well. That when it comes to the level of pain, or it comes to the level of hurt, when it comes to the level of suffering, yeah, I don't pretend that the story equals out in terms of that stuff. The detail is different, and the experience then of it can be so, so different. And I know this, Abraham, he was meant to be a blessing. That's what God called him for. He said, Abraham, I want to bless the world. Because I designed this world and I set the axis. at 23 and a half degrees. And I put the sun at the right distance away from the earth so that it would be the right warmth and the human life could flourish on it. I put Jupiter in the solar system to protect because they needed a mass immense enough to take the meteors in that system and so many other things so that life, I know every hair in their head, and I want them to feel my love. I want them to experience my love. And I'm going to bless you, Abraham, and my ask of you is that then you would allow me to work through you so that you would be a blessing to others. Isaac, your name means laughter. I'm going to bless you, but I want you then to be a blessing to others. And put your name in there. That's your story. That's my story. We want to be that kind of church because here's the reality. We all feel loss and we all feel shame at some point in our lives, but not all people feel loved. It's not all right. That is not okay. It's true, but it's not all right. And can we say, we will do our very best, God. You have so loved us and blessed us. We want to be a blessing and love others. We'll do that. We'll be that church. Everybody feels loss, and everybody at some point feels shame. But not everybody has heard, I am so proud of you. I'm so proud of you. And I got a moment, it was such a cool moment to just do that with a friend of mine. I've watched him for a decade now overcome alcoholism. And he remains an alcoholic, but he's sober. And to get off drugs and to be in a place where his life is incrementally getting better and better and better and better. And I went, man, I am so proud of you. You're doing it. You are doing it. And you're letting God do this work. Not everybody has heard those words. Can we just be that? When God looks down at us and says, you're my child. You're my child. I see you through the eyes of my son, Jesus. I'm proud of you. And we can look for those moments to speak that into each other's lives. Maybe a bit of vision for us as a church. And then you who are hurting could say, this is the place. I want to pull into this harbor because there was a day when this church was spoken about a lot of times as a harbor of hope. That's who we are. And a harbor is a place you actually pull into when your ship is not okay. It's broken down and battered and you pull that thing into the harbor so that it can be repaired. And of course, vessels are meant for the open sea, but sometimes we need to pull in with one another. Can we be that church at a better level? And if we're going to be that, that means you. Asking God to do that in you and through you for us, that we would be a church that it doesn't matter what your story is. It doesn't matter where you've been. I've got ears. I care. You'll feel loved because that's who we are. We've been blessed to be a blessing. And you will find hope here. Because this is a harbor of hope. We are that harbor of hope by the grace of God. We're just starting this series in Isaac next week. We're coming back for, it's Mother's Day next week. Just heads up for any of you that didn't know that yet. Get on it, all right? But we're going to talk about, I am so excited already for next week. We're going to have a powerful time of worship. I believe it already. Because we planned it, and I believe God's going to show up in a powerful way there. And we're going to talk about legacy. What is going to be the legacy of your life? I think it's wrapped up in what we're talking about. I just want to be like Jesus. That's it. I just want to be like Jesus. Do you believe a 100-year-old man and a 90-year-old woman could have a child? Yeah, I believe. Do you believe that could happen here? That we could actually become more and more like Jesus? And people that are broken and hurting and wondering about loss and shame and are in a place saying, I just don't feel loved in this world, could actually feel loved and the transforming power of that love could come through us? Yeah, I believe. Actually, I believe it. I've seen it. I'm asking God for more. Let's pray together. So more, Lord, more. More of yourself. Overwhelm us with your love. More of your Spirit. Empower us to be your church. More people that are feeling the transforming power of your love here in this place. As we step into their story, not with words, but with ears. And with arms. And with heart. And with love. Knowing this, that as we embrace others, the day might come that we need the embrace ourselves. Because we're human. That's who we are. And we ask by the power of the name of the resurrected Jesus, heal us where we need to be healed. Restore us where we need to be restored. Use us where only you can do a work, a miracle of healing in somebody's life. And we want to see more. We want more stories. And so come, Jesus, and do that work. And we pray it in your name. Amen.